welcome to the Pocket Gamer iPhone and iPad Gaming Podcast, episode number 192. I am your host, James Gilmore, and joining me for this especially apple-flavoured podcast is John Hard to the Core Jordan.
Am I? Oh, hello.
Hello there.
All right.
And it's Peter Never Far From the Tree Wellington.
That's right, yeah.
And Keith, apple of my eye, Andrew.
He teaches pet, is he?
It's like Will's never gone away.
Well, obviously, this being, what are we now? September the 13th. This is the day after the night before. So, exciting things went down yesterday, which is probably going to take the main focus of our news today. Apple, that company, what we are all vaguely familiar with, released a thing, an exciting new thing.
Announced a thing.
They did. Oh, they announced a thing. That's probably better. Yeah, it is called a Macintosh Plus. It's all beige. It's got this floppy disk drive thing right in the front. It's part of the TV, which is amazing because, like, you know, it's all one block and it's got a mouse. It's got the one button and you can do... Oh, I've opened the wrong document. Nightmare. It's not really, is it? It's not really.
I've been in bed all day, I think.
Yeah. It's an iPhone 5, isn't it?
Well, hadn't you better play the news jingle first before we get into this?
I've already played it.
You have not.
I have.
I didn't even hear it.
I can play it again if you like.
Do it.
Yes! Oh, that's good. I do like that jingle.
So yeah, this iPhone 5 then, chaps. How's about it, huh?
Keith's the expert.
I'm sapped. Sapped of iPhone 5 knowledge.
Keith has typed iPhone 5 so many times today, as have a few of us, that we don't even know what it means anymore. That's probably why I thought it was a Macintosh.
Quite like a key on my keyboard, actually, that just puts iPhone 5 in automatically if I tap it.
Like Japanese. Character for it, just like,
yeah, that would be handy. I literally heard every single opinion from every single side today, and I cannot remember where my brain resides in all of this.
Well, before we get to opinions, of which I'm sure there will be many, let's handle the specs first. So Mr. Tim Cook turned up on stage last night to unveil the iPhone 5. We'd had a bunch of leaked images and information beforehand, and as it turned out, most of those leaks were actually accurate. So a great number of the details that were released were of no particular surprise to any of us if you've been following it for the past few months. But, in case you weren't aware, it has a new 4-inch screen with a native resolution of 1,136 pixels by 640. It's a 16:9 aspect ratio screen, so... this is the first time, I believe the first time, properly the iPhone has changed aspect ratio. It is a little bit thinner. It is a little bit lighter. Quite a bit lighter, actually. 112 grams now. So 20% lighter. And it has a more powerful A6 chip inside it that apparently is twice as fast in graphical rendering terms and raw processing power. So there you have it. That's your brand new spanking iPhone 5. Initial reactions, boys and girls.
I'm looking at the picture now on attached to our story about it. Mm-hmm. It looks really weird. It looks like someone's done a Photoshop job and just made it a bit longer. It's going to take some getting used to that.
That's exactly kind of what it is, isn't it?
I know, but it just looks really weird.
Not a Photoshop job, but.
Well, it kind of is, but it looks weird. I'd be interested to see one in the flesh, because at the moment, it kind of, just adding that, how much is it, half an inch, just makes it look, it looks different. I don't know, I mean, literally, the interesting I thought from Twitter, and it all depends on who you follow, I guess, is that this is the first time I've ever seen a lot of people, I know to be fond of iPhone and to be iPhone-only people, to kind of sit there, even before it begin, and we're kind of just taking the mick from the word go about this presentation. And that never used to happen certainly to that degree. You always get people who don't like Apple who will sit and watch these things and say, oh, blah, 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 you're all sheep for buying one, etc., etc. But there was literally just kind of wave. I couldn't really find many positive tweets, even before it'd begun, of people saying, yeah, this is good, this is good, until actually things like the iPod Touch started turning up, and then people quite liked that.
Didn't they? Yeah.
And the change to iTunes and stuff like this. That kind of got warm reception. But iPhone itself, I think the general impression was, well, there wasn't really any surprises there, partly because we all knew, as you kind of said, what was coming because it had been leaked to hell, and partly because what else can you do with it, really, hardware-wise? There's not much you can do. You make it a bit better each time. They've kind of run out of avenues to go down now.
Well, if people are feeling a little bit more lackluster about the thing this time around, it could be attributed to a number of things. You could say that the fact that Steve Jobs is no longer fronting the whole thing puts some people off or makes people feel more cynical towards it, perhaps. I'm surprised that you picked up a more negative reaction this time out, because these are much more substantial changes than there were last year. I can understand
I don't think they are. I think last year what was saved it was Siri. And that kind of, even though, when you actually got to it, a lot of people say it doesn't work, the way it was presented wowed the press, and that resulted in, I mean, that was the lead feature, I think, that everyone latched onto. I think the problem with this one is that everything was just a little bit better, and, you could say the screen size is the lead feature, but in terms of journalists writing stories and headlines, you kind of have a sweep of all the press coverage today. They're struggling to find a golden nugget that they can say, this is it. It is essentially just more of the same and a little bit better. I would say Forest was maybe not a bigger upgrade, but by the fact they called it, I guess the distinction is the fact they call it iPhone 5, really, they could call it 4XL or something. I mean, it doesn't feel like it deserves, in the way that iPhone 4 did deserve its own number, this doesn't really feel like it deserves its own number. It is just kind of an extension.
So, I mean, I would argue overall, like, the number of features they've improved upon is more. Do you think they've hamstrung themselves, like Peter, John, do you think they've hamstrung themselves by sort of upgrading everything a bit rather than focusing on one or two aspects and giving them a big boost, which may perhaps journalists or fans could focus on and point at?
I think Keith kind of hit the nail on the head here. For me, it was about, if you're going to put 5 on the end of something, then you expect something big out of it. And you're right in that spreading things, spreading the improvements quite thinly across the entire platform is, that's essentially what they've done. That's what they presented. And it's a totally decent offering that they've come across, that they've put across to the consumer here. It's just that you expect something a little bit more. You expect some sort of magic, and there just wasn't magic at this conference at all. Like, there was nothing to get excited about regarding the phone. So it was just utterly disappointing. Like, I watched a few of the blogs and stuff, and yeah, it was just no one seemed to be excited about the thing.
Well, Pete, we've talked about it before, and I know John's mentioned it as well, talking about these things being more evolutionary than revolutionary. I've heard people throwing that around a bit, and that does seem to be the case here. I mean, John, how did you react to it? What were your thoughts?
I mean, I think they've got to the point now with iPhone where, they've almost like commoditized their own product. It's kind of like, it is what it is. Clearly, I don't think iPhone 6 is going to be, the kind of rumors of like a curved screen or any significant radical change to this stuff. I just don't think it's going to happen anymore. I mean, they've kind of done what everyone expected. So you've got those kind of improvements and thinner and blah, blah, blah. And the camera is upgraded and the battery life's a lot better, which is probably actually more what people care about. Obviously the size, you get 64 gig one now. I mean, that kind of stuff is kind of stuff that people don't want to pay any more for it, but they just want an improvement when they update it. And obviously they've got the 4G. Maybe the more surprising thing is that not the technology, but just it was presented in a very, as you say, kind of workaday manner. There was no attempt really to pull a rabbit out of the hat. And the other thing I'm a bit surprised about is this. It's like black and white. They've still got this, anything as long as it's black and white. It's kind of like, well.
You had your fingers crossed for that frosted pink one, did you?
Well, not really, but I kind of think, certainly Nokia, has done something a bit different with the colours for the new Lumia range, and I'm sure if you were going to have two colours, you'd have black and white, because that's kind of what the ones people are going to want. But to show your personality, it's a little bit kind of dull now. I mean, and I kind of think that, as we've kind of discussed before, I think partly the problem with iPhone, and maybe this is why they've kind of presented it how it is, and this is how it's going to be a boring thing. It is a boring thing now. Like, everyone has an iPhone. You know, it's not, when it came out, it was this cachet, oh, Apple had done a phone. Oh. Now it's literally, you know, it's kind of everyone, you know, you don't have to be particularly rich to have an iPhone.
Unless they suddenly release something that's a different shape or, you know, suddenly has 100 different features in it, then it is going to be pretty much the same device. But on the other side, I've seen a lot of people touting the, well, it's not broken, why fix it, kind of argument.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that might not be a particularly magical thing, and it doesn't capture people's imagination in the same way as massive innovation, but is there really a need? Do you think that if this has kind of caused a somewhat lackluster reaction, do you think Apple are going to have to step it up quite in a big way for the iPhone 6?
I read something today, and this is probably more iOS than iPhone specific, but I mean, we've been talking about it a lot in the Pocket Gamer room about various people's either likes or dislikes of iOS. But I read, I won't name the website because it's not us, but someone wrote a very good, very long, good opinion piece about what has happened to Apple. Essentially, you know, they've fallen into the role that Microsoft had in the 90s and noughties, in that they have, with Windows, they have a product that they know, everyone knows how to use. Various people might have their grumblings with it, but everyone knows how to use it. It has a set formula, and people used to criticize Windows because, by and large, each one would look virtually the same as the last one until this current one. And so the problem that Apple has is they have this huge user base, and it would be to shake it up to a degree. I mean, that's where the innovation can only come from iOS now, really. The hardware is just going to get slightly better each time. If they're going to do anything different, it will come with actually how the software on it works. But the problem is that so many people are now reliant on that model and are used to it, that if they properly shook it up, then they risk losing that audience. It's a hell of a risk, really. So they're in that stage that Microsoft were in 15 odd years ago, where they are trying to keep things as steady as they can for all the people who use it, lest they go to a rival platform that's more familiar. And of course, you've got developers who, I mean, the interesting thing about developers today is that none of them really know what to think. The kind of consumer inside them is a little bit disappointed because they'd have liked this, that, and the other, and flashy features and stuff that all gets removed. But then the business side of them knows that this is working at the moment, and the App Store works essentially, and they can get a turnover from it. And so as long as Apple keeps it the same and everything stays the same, then they can hold on for dear life and hopefully still make some money for it. I mean, if Apple had come and done something radically different with the way it works, then there is a risk that the way they've built their business around iOS would fall apart. So they're kind of torn in between being a bit bored by the actual thing, but then relieved that they haven't gone and, you know, rewritten the rule book.
I mean, I think it's always been the more surprising thing has been iOS 6 is effectively... it's still not been, I guess, officially released yet, so there may be some changes. But that seems like even less interestingly evolution. You know, it's just you kind of
think,
maps, you know,
are 3D, John. Come on, those swoopy maps.
Well, I mean, I just don't think there's a lot. You know, you particularly, I mean, it's with Microsoft and Windows. You know, they have their own particular thing going on there. But that's a really big software kind of update, you know, for that, and obviously much more risky for them. But Jobs would have been someone who probably would have pushed innovation for its own sake kind of more seriously. You know, I don't think he was the kind of guy, you know, who is happy to get 25% growth a year. You know, he's looking to be disruptive. And I just don't think they don't have those characters anymore.
Well, we mentioned a little bit about iOS 6 earlier. That's due to be released on the 19th of September, if listeners haven't already checked it out. It's been in beta since WWDC, the show earlier on in the year. But as you mentioned, you'll get the new Maps app, which has got the kind of 3D cities, which you can zoom in and zoom out and spin around and all that kind of stuff. It'll let you unify a phone number and your Apple ID, which will allow kind of cross-platform messaging and FaceTime. And you'll also get better Facebook integration. How's about that? Which lets you update the status from the slide-down notifications bar. And also, if you happen to have an iPad, you'll finally get access to Siri, which means you'll be able to boss your iPad around and then have it ignore you, just like your iPhone does. But the other thing that they gave us some more information about, this being a gaming podcast, is Real Racing 3, which is something that we've talked about a little bit in the past, but we haven't actually seen the thing running actually on an iPhone in motion. And as part of the conference yesterday, they stepped up. Rob Murray from EA took to the stage and showed us what that looked like. Did anyone actually see footage of it running? Has anyone caught a look at it yet?
I haven't, no.
I pulled up some YouTube footage earlier in the day, and obviously we've got some images up on the site as well, if you just sort of type in Real Racing 3 into the search. It does look good. It does look
looks phenomenal.
Yeah.
Like it looks like, and I know we're not keen on making sort of comparisons to different platforms and stuff, but it looks like Gran Turismo 5. Like, let's not beat around the bush. Yeah. It looks phenomenally good, yeah, to the point that you can absolutely see where, like, you can absolutely see why when people are sort of saying, "Oh, mobile's going to take over home console and stuff like that," what they are showing at the moment, it's like there's a lot more sort of weight that can be put behind that argument with Real Racing 3, I think.
Well, obviously they're using it as an example of, you know, the power of the processor and its graphical capabilities. But when you see the thing in motion, they talk about dynamic reflections, track shadows. It really does look impressive. Now, obviously that's filling up the width of this new screen. Or, you know, if you're holding it in landscape mode, the width of the screen. When it comes to games you already have, there was a little bit of debate beforehand over whether they were going to try and, because it's a new aspect ratio, whether they were going to try and stretch the existing games to fill the screen or what they were going to do. And
no. That would look weird.
Crazy.
That would look weird and mad. And they have opted for the kind of the widescreen TV option, which is they're going to be put black bars on the sides of the screen or the top and bottom if you're holding it in portrait, so that the games will, standard games, the ones you currently have on your iPhone, will maintain their original aspect ratio. And they're just going to black out the areas of the screen that are unused. Now, I've seen people complaining about this online. To me, that seems...
What else can they do?
I know. To me, that seems a common sense thing to do. But people have got a little bit annoyed about it.
It's less a common sense thing to do. It's the only thing to do, really. You can't stretch it. It's incredibly inelegant, really. And you think about something that a smartphone device, everything is swish, swash, that. And they kind of admitted this yesterday is like a dirty little secret, by the way. I mean, you can guarantee that, like, you know, everyone will update their apps. I mean, so developers will be straight on to you know, make their apps iPhone 5, you know, worthy. So it depends how much of an issue it's going to be, but it's not the best to fork out, you know, from day one, when the majority of apps won't be at all that way, to fork out that money for a device and then to have, you know, portion of the screen black on it. It's a bit like buying a widescreen television when widescreen hasn't been invented yet. It's a bit...
So that's kind of what happened with iPad, isn't it? The first iPad came out and people didn't support it natively, so you had to upscale stuff. So, I mean, it's just the way it is.
It's the only way you can do it, but it's a bit of a shame. It doesn't look the best.
Yeah. But it's more than that, though, isn't it? Like, I personally have no real issue with the way that things look. I don't really care about the sort of black borders and stuff, but there are some games on the iPhone that require extremely precise movement, and if you've got an extra black bar sort of bordering on the screen, then it means that some of those movements, especially with dual joystick kind of stuff, like a first person shooter, I'm always finding that my finger just goes ever so slightly off of the screen, and like, so obviously, like, you know, I'm not making any movements. And with extra black borders, I think that problem is going to be exacerbated a little bit more. I don't think there's really anybody talking about that.
Your thumbs are going to be, if there are black borders at the side, your thumbs are going to be sort of closer to the center of the screen. There's going to be more distance you're going to have to reach in to get those, to hit those dual sticks, the sweet spots. So there might be an issue there. I don't know. I mean, Keith, you've been talking to a lot of the developers today, haven't you, and their reactions to this new screen. How has it been? Have they been for it or against? Are they worried or excited?
It isn't actually something that many have mentioned, actually. Only one I can think of has mentioned it and basically said that they're going to put in the work to fix it. But it's not actually, surprisingly, it's not something, when I've asked them things that they don't like about it, they haven't actually mentioned it. So,
well, no one slags off Apple. I mean, it will just be, you know, over time it'll be like the retina resolution. People will just, when they next update their games, they'll put a simple fix in, I think. It's just, I mean, I kind of think that the more interesting thing talking about Real Racing 3 is, I think it's pretty much the wrong way to go.
How so?
Well, the whole point, I think, of mobile gaming is that it's not console replacement. You know, I kind of, while I think technically Real Racing 3, you know, is I'm sure they will have had certain access to maybe not hardware but specs and stuff. So it will look amazing, and you know, Real Racing, you know, the Real Racing brand has always pretty much been at the time it's released, you know, doing the best graphics there. But you know, there's always a little bit of kind of like, well, it's a as you say, it's, you know, Peter, it's like a, you know, oh, it's Gran Turismo 5. Well, yeah, that's not really. While there will be an audience for that on iPad, maybe iPhone. I mean, that's not how you want to experience those games, is it? You want to experience them, you know, on a TV, not with touchscreen, you know, or even like tilt. For me, the thing that's interesting about mobile games is much more, oh, they're always with you. Oh, I can play 5 minutes here. It's not. I kind of think that's a little bit of a red herring. That's a little bit of the wrong way to go. And
I assume they're using it to kind of benchmark the thing, aren't they? They're putting it up there as like, this is what it is actually capable of, and in the future we can expect different things.
Yeah, but that game's going to be released, and you know, you look at, you know, Real Racing has been a successful brand because they, you know, they put it out at whatever $10, you know, that's it. But if you look at the top grossing, you know, it is, Real Racing does not sit in the top grossing games for a year like you know, Dragon Veil or CSR Racing. You know, that is not that. Those are not the games that are successful on this platform.
Well, another thing that came sort of hand in hand with all the iPhone announcement brouhaha was the 4G networks that are going to be rolled out in the UK. It has a, you know, linking this vaguely to games. You do need it to download your games and to do your wireless gaming and whatnot. EE, which is the newly renamed thing between T-Mobile and Orange, it was called Everything Everywhere. Is that right? I think that's what it's called.
Yeah.
And that was going to be, they've renamed themselves EE and have revealed what's going to be the UK's first 4G network. And it's actually going to be coming out this year, which is obviously supposed to deliver, you know, hugely faster speeds than your 3G is currently delivering. It's going to be available initially. It's for games on T-Mobile and Orange. And they're apparently promising up to 5 times the speed of the 3G standard. Now, whether that actually happens in reality, anyone who's ever bought an internet package knows that when they get told they get 50 megabytes a second, then probably they won't. But apparently up to 5 times the speed if they're in a sweet spot. Now, they've also said that the iPhone 5, I believe, will be compatible with this network.
Yeah.
But not with the other networks that may launch later. So what we're having, the situation at the moment seems to be that provided you buy your iPhone on T-Mobile and Orange, then you're fine. If you buy it on any other network, then you're not going to get your 4G speeds. Now, how excited are people for the 4G thing? I mean, obviously, this hugely faster speed sounds great in principle. Is it dependent on pricing? I mean, are they going to charge through the nose for people to use this? And can you see it really being a huge benefit to have being able to download huge files to a storage unit that doesn't have a huge capacity?
I think it's more of a an issue for people streaming media and so forth. I don't think it's much of an issue for games, because you know, the amount of time you can sit and wait, however long it takes to sit in your download box. But I think it's more of a case more of people using them to stream movies and so forth, then this kind of does make a big difference. I mean, 4G, as I understand it, it can be much faster than broadband, so you know, it's quite a huge shift in the way we might use phones and tablets when they all switch to this. The problem is, the technical stuff kind of goes over my head, but as I understand it, the reason why Orange and T-Mobile as EE are able to do this is because they've got extra space that they in their network that they're utilizing in a sort of homebrew 4G, whereas the official 4G contracts, which haven't gone out yet, won't, you know, launch till later. So it'd be interesting, the fact that the iPhone, I mean, I assume what happens is that when the time comes, and this is quite a way off yet, when Vodafone and O2 launch their official 4G ones, that Apple will have made an iPhone that works with it. I can't imagine that they won't. But that was the big kind of scoop today. Your iPhone won't work with this, that, and the other network on 4G and all this. I'm sure they will do it at some point. This is just EE getting ahead of the game. But I think, obviously, give it a few years when 4G is everywhere and everyone will be on 4G, it'll just be the thing, as 3G became quite quickly the thing that everyone had.
Yeah. Does anyone really care about bandwidth speed? I mean, I know it's one thing like tech journalists go on about, but literally, I cannot be more bored about
it. I don't think anyone, like I say, I don't think anyone cares now, but I think the more and more people have these tablets and phones that they don't want to be tied in their house with, and they might just want to watch EastEnders in HD on iPlayer.
Oh, come on.
Yeah, I mean, that is the transition to devices. That's what these devices are coming for. I mean, that's why the iPhone's widescreen, because it's not for games. It's widescreen for media, and they recognise that this is what these devices are going to be for, and people don't want to think, I've got to sit and use this on my BT broadband or whatever one you're on. They want to use it on the bus. They want to be able to stream an HD movie on their phone or their tablet while they're out and about. And
I think everything is sort of going that way. I would concede that I don't really want to watch a film on a screen that small. It just doesn't really lend itself to the format. But for television and things like that, I do find it quite useful. And as you say, once 4G is the standard, and provided that they're not completely scalping you in terms of data usage and things like that, if you can just everyone just has infinite data or whatever, then it will become a standard. It might seem a bit,
it'll take a fair few years. But I mean, that's what these devices are built for. That's what they're in mind for. This is the speed that will enable that to happen. At the moment, essentially we'll hit a wall where you can't progress with all these services on 3G because it just doesn't allow the speed unless you're sat by a Wi-Fi connection, which people just don't want to do anymore.
Well, yeah, I mean, we haven't talked about the iPod Touch. The iPod Touch was actually the much more interesting, but the iPod Touch, was kind of actually not the surprise because that had been leaked beforehand, but was kind of the most interesting thing out of it, that they've done something a little bit different now with the iPod. Taking a little bit, I don't know, I just think they've got a bit more freedom with those devices. Mm-hmm. That, they're a slightly different audience. They can do the colour stuff on them. They can... And I kind of think it's interesting that actually I think when iPad came in, the iPod Touch kind of got relegated a little bit. And I kind of think, we'll see. I mean, I guess this is the attempt to kind of reinvigorate that market a little bit. But I mean, I certainly won't be buying an iPhone. But at some point, I will update. I mean, I've got a fourth-gen iPod Touch. At some point, I'll update that.
I've got my iPad. I'll be holding on to that for the time being, and I'm still in a contract anyway. I still find the pricing a little bit beyond me, to be honest.
I personally dislike the iPhone design, and I've never liked it as a consumer electronics device. But that's me.
Get off this podcast. And Keith, we all know where your loyalties lie. So I assume you'll be getting 12 of these.
I would always want to have, the way things stand, an iOS device. But I can't say I'd ever want it as a phone because the OS is a bit backwards. But it's fine, for display games on and so forth. And the iPod Touch looks far nicer to look at than the new iPhone, which looks a bit odd. Especially with the new colours, which is weird that they feel that they can do that with new colours and not do it with iPhone.
Maybe for them, this is the experiment to see maybe next time around, how do we manufacture kind of plastic in this colour? Because I remember all the problems they had about the white iPhone, and they couldn't do it for ages, and there was all these rumours about, why they couldn't do that.
Peter, are you in any way enchanted? Are you tempted?
It's a good phone, but if I've already got a 4S, so... It just doesn't seem like enough of a kind of step up, even if I wasn't tied in some ludicrous contract. The things that really excite me are changes in UI and making that easier. So, again, I'd sort of reiterate that. I mean, I'd probably go for a Windows phone if I suddenly smash mine next, tomorrow. So, just for change.
Would you think when your contract ended in 6 months' time, would you upgrade to an iPhone 5?
No, I'd probably just hold off for the one after that because, whatever. God, let's not start rumors now. But whatever that happens to be, I think with Apple, what you need to do is kind of time stuff quite well so that you don't get left behind. That's the problem for me with Apple products. The fact that after, let's say, 3, maybe 4 years, the beautiful bit of hardware that you bought brand new is useless. So
Well, yeah, I mean, that's the poor old first-gen iPad, which is, what, 2 years old?
And, yeah.
And it is, you know, it's dead. It's relegated now, and you think, poor thing.
My iPad can hear you, Keith.
So can mine. Mine has a huge dent in the back to just kind of make you feel even more sorry for it. It just, poor thing.
Well, it doesn't sound like they've sold any on this podcast yet. But, listeners, if you guys are enchanted by the new iPhone 5, then you can pre-order it as of... Can you actually pre-order it now? I think it's... No, orders begin on September the 14th, so tomorrow, which will be, in fact be now. So this podcast will go up today. So, as of now, you can pre-order the iPhone 5. Now, this, depending on whether you're tied into contracts or not, and whether you're in the US or the UK, there's big differences. So we've got the 16 gig model you can get for $199, 32 gig $299, and 64 gig $399, but that's all with a 2-year contract. British prices, they haven't listed the contract prices yet, but they have included the price for the unlocked handsets on their own, and they start at £529. For the 16 gig
one. It's more, isn't it? That's more. I'm not imagining that. That's more.
No, that's more. I mean, obviously, these are tied into contracts, so they're going to be cheaper. So when, you know, when they announce our contracts, it'll probably be a few hundred.
Is that not more than what a 4S was unlocked at that? It just seems more to me.
Those prices are irrelevant because obviously the operators will find a level at which they can kind of undercut or reset or resell you certain packages.
Most people buy within contract rather than unlocked. So we'll have to wait and see what the prices will be, but... pre-orders on the 14th onwards, and it should be shipping in most countries from September the 21st. So, week and a half, and you may well have your shiny new iPhone 5, which you can show to people, and people can go, eh. Apparently. This podcast is anything to go by. We should probably move on and cover something that isn't just a phone, being as this is a gaming podcast. So, we're going to scoot on over to... The new releases roundabout. We are here at the new releases roundabout. It's deadlock once again. People are trying to get to a store. The store's got an Apple symbol on the side of it. I don't know what they're after. Still, we're on the sidelines from the pavement, mucking about with our iPhones as we do, looking at the new releases for this week. Now, first on the list, we have a game from Miniclip called Rail Rush. We've only got a screenshot for this one, but we can tell from the description that it is a Temple Run-esque game, which means you'll be endlessly running. Although in this case, rather than stomping feet along the floor, we've got what appears to be an Indiana Jones cipher on the back of a rail cart, a la Indiana Jones in Temple of Doom. Zooming along, reaching out and collecting gold and bits and bobs. Apparently you can equip the cart, collect power-ups that will make your cart run for longer, and it pretty much looks exactly like that bit out of Temple of Doom, actually.
Well, there's different characters and stuff that you unlock. There's like a Tomb Raider-esque young lady with two guns and a fireman and stuff.
So you've got a Lara Croft cipher and an Indiana Jones one.
Yeah, and there's other ones as well. Yeah.
It looks like a geeky Indiana Jones, so doesn't he?
Well, you don't want to get too close to the license, do you? Yeah.
We've only got the image at the moment, but if you can imagine Temple Run with a bit more red and a sticker hat on the chap that's running, and possibly humband.
And he's not running, he's sitting in a cart.
Yeah, that's true.
Apart from that.
Lazy. Lazy.
So more of an endless roller or something.
Yes.
Roll it, maybe. Something like that. Well... It's called Rail Rush, out on the App Store for your iPhone only at the moment, and that's 69p99 cents. Moving on, by a company enchantingly named Damp Nat. Oh, I like the name. Wonder Putt, which apparently, according to the blurb, may be the best looking golf game you'll ever see on a mobile
device.
Gorgeous.
Looks
gorgeous. It does look
so
nice, actually, doesn't it?
Yeah. Oh, it does look quite pretty, actually. We're having a little look now.
Apparently, is this based on a flash game?
How is that golf?
It's got a very strange advert, actually.
Yeah, that's not golf.
It's mini golf.
Nice logo.
You always
there's iPad 2 as well at the end.
It's pretty high end, yeah.
says iPad 2 and newer.
It does look like, listeners, you can't obviously see this. It's bizarre. It kind of looks like you're building like worlds, like it's some kind of godsend. But actually, it does look like you're building or creating like a putt-putt golf course, a very, very elaborate one.
Isometric thing, yeah.
Yeah, in which you've got water slides and, you know, it's traveling along rainbows, it's going down ski courses. It
sounds like one of your dreams.
Well, at my dream recorders again, haven't you? That's still annoying me from anyone who's watched Prometheus, that dream recorder nonsense. Anyway, sorry, tangent. So you get to build what looks like a slightly balmy isometric golf course. And you'll be going through 18 holes, avoiding apparently cows, toads, ski slopes, torpedoes, and UFOs, which I'm sure would liven the game of golf up no end.
But it was originally a PC indie game, so yeah, so you are right, Peter.
Okay.
Ah. Not necessarily a flash game, but I'm not sure exactly what it was made.
You know, one of them, you know, one of them PC small games. They're all flesh.
Mm-hmm. Well, it is flesh and dead pretty, like. So that one can be yours for 69p99 cents. Wonder putt. Ah, here's one we're at least somewhat familiar with: Field Runners 2 HD. So the Field Runners 2 came to the App Store a little while back, but they've just released the HD version for the iPad. You are defending bases against waves of attacking bad guys by building towers. So, you know, it was the first one was extremely popular, Tower Defense Fair, presented really nicely. And the second one, I believe we rated it pretty strongly as well. Is anyone a fan?
The first one. Just the weird thing about it was they were so successful originally, and then it took them like ages and ages and ages to update it. It seemed odd.
Mm. Well, now they have done. It still looks strikingly handsome. Really, really pretty from the screenshots. Looks good in motion. However, I have opened up the App Store page, and lots of bad reviews claiming it's crashing.
Oh, really?
Mm. Yeah. At least on the iPad 3, if not more. Obviously,
it takes super long to launch.
Well, they usually sort these things out once these complaints start happening. But if you're doing it at the moment, just have a look at the reviews before you dive in. I don't think they've had the same problem with the iPhone version. But if you are prepared to take the plunge, it is going to cost you a little bit. $7.99. So that works out to...
$7.99 is €5.49.
Right, okay. So if you're intending to get that one, have a little look at the comments, see if they've sorted out the bugs first. But it looks dead good, and I'm sure once they've sorted it out, it'll be lovely. Going down a little bit further, I've actually had a little look at this. Soldiers vs. Aliens by Bulky Picks. So what we've got is you are a space marine-looking soldier fellow who's apparently a badass mercenary, as if that makes any difference. Standing on the left-hand side of the screen, you've got your little wall, your little defense wall. It's not tower defense. It's one of those ones where you scooch up and down the vertical, blasting away at aliens who are swarming in from the right-hand side of the screen. So it's defending your position, not tower defense, but defending your position against squigglies. It looks actually quite nice in motion. It seems to be drawing on a mixture of like the actual, you know, the alien films, that sort of
thing. You can't say that.
Drawing on, I said, not ripping.
Ripping on.
That's something different. No, drawing inspiration from the alien film, and actually a little bit from. They remind me of here's a geek reference: Warhammer 40K Tyranids. They look a bit like that. Yes, Peter's with me all the way.
Mm-hmm. Yep. No, not Gene Stealers, but the other ones.
The other ones. Terror somethings?
Yeah.
Whatever they are. Yeah, those I'm going to cut my losses while I'm ahead and not remember that because, yeah, that's too tragic. But it seems to be drawing on all of those. There'll be 50 levels. You get a bunch of missions, which include protecting scientists, clearing areas, and there's a queen alien involved. Which is I don't know where they get this stuff from, to me. But you can get that, and that's downloadable for free on iPhone and iPad. So
it says
on the little list. It says download free. I imagine there'll be some costs inside for energy.
I played it at Gamescom actually.
Mm-hmm.
Thought it was a bit generic.
Yeah.
Yeah. Whatever.
Well, if you like generic alien,
put myself into a corner there. I think it's free app of the day at the moment.
Ah, okay.
So that's why it's free. So if you do want it, get it now. I think it will go back to a 99p game.
Fair enough. Right, you are then. Well, moving down to Cosmic Bump by that little-known company, Chillingo.
Cosmic Bump.
You had a Cosmic Bump once, didn't you, Keith?
Oh, dear. I don't know why I'm finding that so funny. Sorry.
I do. So, what we have, again, we haven't seen this in motion, but you appear to be controlling a orange blob thing with an eye and moving him around an environment. You've got an alien driver who's crashed his UFO into the ground. You need to go and collect fuel cells that are scattered around the environment, and there'll be six chapters in which you can solve these environmental puzzles.
Yeah, but I think it's different. They're different kind of theme levels. There's some you're kind of like being blown by air jets and that kind of
So flippers, fans, portals, and
physics and things.
Physics and junk. Yeah, physics. One of them. So yeah, iPhone and iPad, 99 cents, 69p. Going down again. Speaking of physics, Isaac Newton's Gravity 2. I didn't know he was still making games. That's
glad they got the license there.
Yeah, I know. It's good to know, isn't it? He would be turning in his grave whilst explaining how he was able to turn in his grave. What it is a physics-based puzzler in which you have to... There's a red button inside every stage, and your objective is to push the thing. Which apparently sounds easy, but it means you have to create chain reactions with pipes, magnets, trampolines, that sort of thing. So it's one of those amazing contraption games, by the sounds of it. Anyone played the first one?
Nope.
No. Well, it does look...
It's a contraption game.
Yeah, it's one of those contraption games. Anyone who's played Amazing Alex will be familiar with these sorts of things by now. So you've got... 100, well, it's 10 free levels when you buy it. So you download it free, get 10 levels, but then there are over 100 more that you can purchase in-app. So you're going to have to cough up some money if you want the rest of it, but if you want to try it out, it looks a little bit psychedelic, actually, doesn't it?
Have you seen the icon?
I have not. Is it...
It's like a JPEG error in the top of it. It's a bit...
Mm. Oh, really?
Well, Keith Andrew reviewed the first one, gave it 8 out of 10. he knows all about it, apparently.
I can't remember that.
February 2010.
Oh, God, it's a different man back then. Look at the icon needs. Oh, the icon's a bit.
You and your icons.
Look at it. They've got it. It's wrong. It's a mistake at the top.
I'm convinced all your reviews were ghost written.
I was asleep when I wrote most of them, so.
Sleep written. Okay.
Written at about 4 in the morning.
Well, if you are a fan of that particular genre, or you'll just like to Amazing Alex, then Isaac Newton's Gravity 2, download it for free now, try out the first 10 levels, see what you think.
I honestly cannot remember
that. A few other ones out as well. There's another Tower Defense one to go through.
Mm-hmm. Go for
Jedi
it.
Oasis, who have done some interesting stuff before, I think. They got one called Lich Defense.
Oh, yes.
L-I-C-H, $2. So it's
are these the guys who did Elf Defense?
Yes.
Okay.
That did pretty well. So I guess it's maybe a little bit of a, maybe not a reskin, but obviously they're kind of quite keen on the Tower Defense kind of thing. 60 quests, really nice artwork. I mean, isometric. So it's kind of, I think you would say it looks like a fairly traditional approach to Tower Defense, but looks nice, kind of mystical. Mm-hmm. And Square Enix have released Guardian Cross, which is a free-to-play card battling RPG. As if we needed any more card battling RPGs.
but this one's got pictures of Final Fantasy beasties on it, hasn't
quite
it?
Quite popular at the moment. I have to say I do not get these games. I'm really, really lost.
I think they'll appeal to the Final Fantasy fan base. I think they're drawing on creatures from, I think it's 11 and 14 Final Fantasy iterations.
No, really?
So yeah, really. It was very specific in the, I think I read up the story, it was very specific.
Only the MMOs?
Yeah, yeah.
The MMOs that no one liked.
Go figure. But to be fair, those MMOs do still have characters from the whole series, so it doesn't, you know, if you get something from 11, it's still got Ifrit and Shiva and all that lot in it. Yeah. So, you know, same difference, really. But the artwork looks nice, and yes, it's another card battle. And interestingly, it's a Square Enix game, and it's free.
Yeah, but again, this one again is a free app of the day. So presumably, it might I don't know. I can't believe it will go back to being paid because all these card battling games are free. So
you generally upgrade, pay for decks and things like that.
Oh, and actually, there's another one. Talking of these card battling games, Zynga released one this week as well, didn't they? It's the first Zynga. Mm-hmm. It's the first game from Zynga Japan. So they have a team, I guess in Tokyo, and they've released these games. One's called Montopia, and one's called Akashi. that's the Japanese pronunciation.
You should do the trailer.
So one's like a monster collecting card game, and one's a kind of spirit collecting, ghosty collecting card game. So they're card battling PvP kind of games. So Montopia's out this week, and the other one's out later in the month. So yeah, card battling all over the place. If you can work out how it plays. Plenty of games for you.
Okay, well, lots to be getting on with then. But we've obviously been playing a few games ourselves this week, so we should probably scoot on over to the What We've Been Playing field.
What We've Been Playing!
Here we are on the What We've Been Playing fields. A quick look around, we'll see that there are many shadowy figures walking slowly, almost zombie-like, towards a large factory. That factory, again, has a huge apple on the side of it. I guess they're after something. Who knows what? But good luck to them, I say. And I look forward to the large sigh of meh when they get there. But we've been playing on our own iPhones and iPads a few lovely games for this week. Let's start with Keith.
I've been very busy.
Well, are you saying you haven't played any games?
I may not have done.
You may not have done.
I have actually been playing too. I'm still playing Granny Smith and still playing. what was the other one I liked the week before?
That, ladies and gentlemen, was the sound of Keith copping out.
No, I have.
Hold on.
My iPad isn't near me right now. And I can't remember the bloody name. The one with the Super Mole Escape. That's it. I've been playing Super Mole Escape. Granny Smith.
You were fond, weren't you? Yeah.
They're both very, very good and similar in a way. So I've been playing those. I haven't had time for all these new flashy games you kids spend your pocket money on.
Well, Peter, what have you been playing this week?
Guys, I've been playing Scribblenauts Remix.
Oh, wowzers.
Yeah, and I don't think it's very good.
Oh, really?
Oh, double wowzers.
I think the idea is really excellent. Essentially, if you haven't played it, guys, you play as a little guy, and he has like a marker pen, I guess, and he can basically, you type something in to like a little keyboard prompt, and then whatever that thing is that you put in comes up, and you can think of whatever you want, theoretically, as long as it doesn't infringe on trademark or isn't explicit or something like that. Although I did try that second one out quite a lot. Nothing ever came about. I got a lot of chickens. But basically, the idea is that you can put in these things and you create them, and that's all fantastic. And this remix version, you can put in adjectives and sort of like modifiers and that sort of thing. And it will change what that object is. So you can say it's a blue dog, or it's a whatever. And that's fun, that little playground area of trying out things and going, oh, I wonder if I can try and beat it. And there's a lot of fun in trying to beat the sort of dictionary that it has and trying to find something that it doesn't have. But the problem with that is, one, that's not much of a game at all. And two, when you do beat it, you kind of feel a little bit disappointed. Like, you're like, oh, like, it's like beating your dad for the first time. it's like, yes, I finally, oh, no. And so I don't really care for that. And then there's this single player sort of campaign, I suppose one might say, and you go through it and have to sort of get through little objectives. Like, they'll say, oh, this lion is hungry, feed him, and you've just got to think about how you might go about doing that. But the thing that it sort of pushes you a little bit towards is, well, what's the most interesting way that you could feed that lion? You might be able to just put a load of humans in and see them sort of scatter about, and then the lion eats them and whatever, and everyone's had a lovely time except for the humans. But the most direct way is always the easiest to complete it, and I'm the sort of person who wants to finish a game. So I just go steak, or, you know, this person is ill, cure them, medicine. Like, it's not that's not a challenge. It's like having a game shark slammed into your iPhone at the same time as you're playing it, you know, because you have access to everything you could possibly want. I don't think it looks very good. I think it animates horribly. I think the actual design of it is sweet enough, but it's a bit sort of old ground kind of being retrod. And the music, I think, is wishy-washy, kind of pathetic, turn it off sort of stuff. The only really cool thing, and it was, again, one of these small moments of looking at the technology and going, wow, that's kind of cool, is that it is on a 4S, you can use Siri. So that's kind of interesting. You know, it's more responsive than Siri is for doing what you actually want to do. But it, again, you've still got that baseline of what that game actually is. And that's not very fun. So it's interesting technology, but it's not a very good game.
How long before you summoned Cthulhu, though?
Roughly 35 minutes.
Really? That's holding out quite a bit.
I know. Well, I had there was a lot of swear words to go through first. and then I was trying out I got hung up a lot on I don't think Coke works. No, I think you have to have cola.
Oh, so I got. Do they not do brand names then?
No, not at all.
See. I was trying to put this little my scribble naught into horrible situations featuring people like, you know, Hitler and Cthulhu. In fact, I think Hitler versus Cthulhu was the reason that I wanted to see what would happen.
Oh, I'd watch that film.
But, well, exactly, I'm currently directing it. I've got a Kickstarter. but unfortunately, guys, Hitler was unavailable, so...
Oh. Okay, fair enough. Well, Mr. John Jordan, how about yourself?
The one I have started, it's actually not come to iOS yet, but is coming to iOS at some point soon. And it's continuing, actually, because I guess the last couple of weeks I've been boring people by playing PvP city-building games. So... Clash of the Clans, still playing. Arcane Empires from Kabam. Not Kabam, yes, it's Kabam. Still playing that, even though I've not got to the stage yet. I'm still building my blooming city. The problem is I'm a very odd player. So I play PvP games, and I'm not so keen on the PvP aspects of it. So it's been ages building up my base, and I've not really worked out how to attack other people yet.
You don't want anyone to be like, you build it all up, and they're like, nobody touch it, everyone get away.
Yeah. So another game in that genre is called Kingdom Royale from Korean publisher Gameville. It came out for another platform last 2 weeks ago. So again, the game's very similar. You kind of build up your city, and then it's a bit more like Arcane Empires. It's quite resource heavy. So you I guess Clash of Clans is very simple. You basically have two resources. The other ones tend to be a bit more traditional. So you've got silver and bread, or wood and stone and metal. So you kind of collect all these. You need all those to create your army and stuff. Now this one's a bit more... I guess being a Korean company, it has a strong anime character. So big eyes and small noses and spiky hair. Quite... fantasy swords and stuff. So I quite like the I think it's quite interesting to play heavily in one genre and to kind of see the differences and kind of work out what you like. Partly because I'm a boring journalist, I do that so I can write an article about the differences. Which is what we're planning to do. These games, to be completely honest, Arcane Empires, which I've been playing now for about 2 weeks, I've spent still spending money in Clash of Clans. I've not spent any money in the other two yet.
What are you up to with Clash of Clans? This should be a separate feature on its own.
Yeah,
What are you up to with Clash of Clans?
I did another £7 last weekend.
Which makes how much, roughly?
Because you're getting up to 50, yeah.
John, is this game actually... It is out now, isn't it? You're not still in the base.
Clash of Clans, oh yeah, no, it's been out for... It's been out for a couple of months. Yeah, started in. I was on the beta in July,
Oh, right. Yeah, of course. Sorry.
Are we going to have to, like, is there going to be an intervention at some point? We're all going to have to step in and take it off of you.
There might be. It's true. I'm almost on 1,000 trophies now, so I'm counting a little
bit.
Anyway, yeah, so it's just interesting, I think, to play these games and see how they, because obviously they're, and I think why at some point when after I've got over these ones, maybe I will stop playing some of the card battlers. I think it's quite interesting to try and work out how they work and then compare different ones, because they're following a formulae, but they're all trying to
Magic 2013 is supposed to be excellent. Will got very, very excited about it.
A bit hardcore for me, but yeah, we'll see. So anyway, so Kingdom Royale, not actually out for iOS yet, but at some point it will be, and I'm sure I will talk about it more.
Well, the game I'm going to talk about, I've actually been playing a little bit of Final Fantasy Dimensions this week, the game that we talked about a couple of weeks ago. But I haven't played enough. I don't really want to pass judgment on it yet. I'm kind of in between at this point. So what I actually want to talk about briefly was something that I played last week at the Ubi conference, and I ended up spending quite a lot of time on it, is a game called Nutty Fluffies, which is from Redlinx, the folks behind Motor Heroes and obviously on the consoles, Trials HD, which has obviously been massively popular and great fun. It follows the mold of those two games to some degree, but it's doing something slightly different. It's the biggest departure from their set things. Moto Heroes, if you haven't already played it, was a kind of a 4x4 version of Trials, really. It was a small, you know, microcosmed version of the Trials game, even shorter levels. You control your vehicle going left and right. His pitch with two arrows on the left-hand side and accelerate with the right. And, you know, it was pretty much was Trials, just on an iPhone version. This is you're controlling a roller coaster. So the whole roller coaster is laid out in front of you. You have a line of carriages, each of which are filled up with soft toys. So the idea is it's a carnival theme, and when everybody goes away, all the carnival toys come to life in a vaguely Toy Story-esque way. And they all jump on the roller coaster, and they go whizzing off and have a grand old time. Unless you've got me controlling it, in which case I rocket them off the edge of a broken roller coaster, they all fly off and plummet to their furry, fluffy doom. You know, you've got to occupy yourself somehow. So it works slightly differently from the rest of them. Gone are the floating kind of touch controls. This one is done entirely through gestures. So it starts in a stationary thing and you swipe forward. You swipe left to right on the screen and the roller coaster, you know, takes off, rockets up the hill. And as it's running along, if you want to speed up, you keep swiping the left to right, left to right. And if you want it to brake, you swipe in the other direction. And depending on how hard you do so, you know, obviously adjusts the ferocity of the deceleration. So it's actually immediately far more intuitive and more fun to play on an iOS device rather than just having the left and right pitch. Because you have that kind of micro control over it, you can flick it very gently and it'll just speed up a bit, or you can just big old swipe and it'll take off. That's good. It makes you feel much more connected to the thing you're controlling. Obviously, the idea is to stay on the track as much as possible. You have to collect hearts that are scattered all around the track. Obviously, there are hearts along the lines themselves, but there are hearts also kind of up in the air, positioned above the track. So when you go over, you go up a steep hill and then it comes down the other side, the idea is you'll sometimes have to go a bit too fast. It'll kind of take off. The first row of carriages will fly up in the air, and then you'll have to kind of brake to pull them down, and they'll gradually kind of fall down through gravity and then you know, shoot down the other side. So you have to kind of almost have the thing do jumps. But with it being a roller coaster, you've got a big chain of carriages behind you, and you can very easily start having the rear carriages kind of flipping over, you know, coming over the top of the lead carriages, and then tumbling down, and the whole thing just smashes to smithereens. So there is kind of more to consider in the physics angle rather than just flipping your bike. You have to, it's a linked chain, so the end can topple over or the front can go backwards. So it's much more kind of flexible and elastic the way that you're controlling it. The other aspect is there's this kind of, not gambling, but there's this kind of this almost, what you have to do is the animals themselves that you populate the vehicles with, have their own special kind of passive power-up powers. Mm-hmm. So if you get like an elephant, he will, I don't know, he gives you like 10 extra hearts when you finish cross the finish line. And he likes doing certain things. So when he jumps in the air, he might like that. You get extra hearts. When they go downhill at high speeds, he might like that. And then you've got cats and dogs and rats and all these other types of animals. Each of them cost, you know, a different amount. Like pigs are cheaper than elephants, for example. But pigs give you less reward than elephants. So when you're...
is this in life or in the game?
I think it applies to both. So when you're populating your craft, you have to work out how much gold you have, how much you're kind of willing to gamble almost on it. And then when you populate your craft with the all the different creatures, if they make it to the end, that's fine. You get all your winnings and you get all the hearts are turned into gold. So you get coin and you get a bigger reward. However, if you lose them en route, if you accidentally flip the thing and all the animals fall out, you have to replace them for the next run. So there's this kind of
that's good.
There's this kind of almost wagering element where how much are you prepared to gamble that you're not going to screw it up? Because if you populate the whole thing with the most expensive creature, which is elephants, and tip them all out, then it's going to be very costly to replace them, and you're not going to get any winnings. So your gold can decrease quite quickly. Now, obviously, what you can do is buy more gold through in-app purchases.
Naughty.
But if you choose the rat, he doesn't cost a thing. He doesn't really give you any bonuses either. I think he gives you like 2 hearts extra, and that's it. But you can technically staff the whole thing with rats, pay absolutely no money, and complete the entire game. But it will obviously take longer, as is always the case with these things. It will take longer. You need to get a certain amount of gold to unlock the next track. There are 4 different worlds. I think there are about 8 tracks on each world. And you need gold to unlock them. So if you're prepared to play through the same track a bunch of times to unlock the next world, that's fine. If you're very good at it, you might unlock things quicker. Or if you're prepared to stump up some cash, it might do so. Now, it looks good. It's really nicely presented, and it is fun. It's different to Trials, different enough from Trials and Motor Heroes to make it interesting and sort of worth a look. It's perhaps more kiddie friendly because they've got the fluffy toy aspect. But weirdly, they are all sitting in the craft with a very like pissed off look on their faces. So it's not as cutesy as you might think. That might just be because I was playing it wrong and they looked annoyed. But yeah. It's cutesy, but sort of not too much. But they told us they were a bit vague about it, Red Links. But they said it'll be kind of weeks rather than months before it comes out. So it'll definitely be before the end of the year. Should definitely be. But it could be in the next few weeks. It'll turn up. But they're good at this stuff, Red Links. They've got pedigree where this is concerned. And this is different enough to make it worthy of your attention. How much they sting you for in-app purchases will remain to be seen, but the game itself is kind of fun, a little bit different, and a bit of a laugh. So,
but what's the name again?
It's called... my only gripe with the game is it's called Nutty Fluffies, which isn't...
See, that's just like...
The best name.
Odd, isn't it? That's really odd.
Yeah, like that's literally what I came back from France. I was like, yeah, Nutty Fluffies, great game, bad name. I had a Keith moment where I'm like, ooh, that logo. it's a bit of a mouthful, and maybe they might. That's another Keith moment, incidentally.
if you got Nutty Fluffies, I'd go to the doctor if I was you.
That brings us to the end of this iPhone 5 Appalooza. Thanks everybody for listening. Hopefully you're a little bit more informed than you were when you came in, or if we've robbed information from you along the way. We're terribly sorry, but you can check out all the iPhone 5 businesses all up on the site. And Pocket Gamer Biz has got some very interesting discussions with the iPhone developers, iPhone app developers, and their varying reactions to the new phone. So check out both sites. My thanks to John, Peter, and Keith for joining me. And we will catch you in the next week for more iPhone gaming stuff. Take care, everybody. Thanks.
Bye.